CBS Around the World, I'm John Batchelor. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, Daystone Newsweek in the Hill, joins me. Gordon, in the last days, there has been a display of warships that strike me as unusual. The HMS Queen Elizabeth Carrier Strike Group and its attendant ships, support ships, including one, a Dutch support ship, a U.S. support ship, and now news that Germany is sortieing into these waters. Do you regard this, Gordon, as a demonstration to Beijing? Good evening, Gordon.
Good evening, John. This certainly is a demonstration to Beijing because we have a number of countries which normally are not present in the South China Sea sending their warships there. So clearly the world is forming a loose coalition to try to deter China from its more aggressive moves.
Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies joins us because whenever we go to the Indo-Pacific, we go there thanks to Cleo's expert witness. And what we're looking at here is a puzzlement. Cleo, we know very well the Quad, formed some years past, is now reengaged by the Biden administration. That's Delhi, that's Canberra, that's Tokyo, and that's the U.S. But looking at these deployments of naval warships, I see the Dutch warship, I see the German warship mentioned, and certainly the Queen Elizabeth, that's the prize of the Royal Navy, the new carrier carrying U.S. Marine Corps F-35s. So has the Quad grown? Do I need a new geometric pattern to describe this? Good evening to you, Cleo.
Good evening. I think the Quad is the Quad, but what we're seeing are a series of overlapping alliances and partnerships that will just serve to reinforce each other. And there's another one which is even more interesting. There was recently a trilateral between the U.S., Japan, and Taiwan. So those sorts of things are coming together, and they can bolt onto each other. So India might be able – India's very interested in this U.S., Japan, Taiwan thing and might be able to come onto that in a more quiet way politically than the Quad because of the Taiwan issue, but it incorporates Taiwan in a way that we hadn't really seen before as overtly militarily. And that's actually thanks mostly to the Japanese and to former Prime Minister Abe. So we're seeing these new configurations coming together and these quad pluses, but also just little standalone pieces that can be bolted onto and readjusted. And it's a way of the allies and partners learning each other's capabilities and what works and what doesn't in terms of configurations.
Gordon, you have a question for Cleo.
Cleo, there are a number of countries in Southeast Asia which sort of sit on the sidelines. You got Malaysia, sometimes Brunei, Singapore. They are friends of the U.S., but they also are wary of aggravating China. What is their posture now as they see these countries come together in these warship configurations which haven't been seen before?
So that's a very good point, and especially the Malaysia and Singapore element of it, because there are all of these little alliances or, again, partnerships that have been just lying there waiting to be resurrected. And those two are part of what's called the Five Powers Defense Agreement with the UK, Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, and Malaysia. So that's another one that seems to be getting resurrected in this in this new time of looking for these overlapping partnerships. And remember that, you know, Beijing benefits from what it calls or what can be called multilateralism. So it says it's a multilateral organization partner like in ASEAN, but it goes after the countries one by one. So the thing that scares Beijing the most are countries coming together and working together militarily, economically, politically. And so as all of these different little configurations pop up, each one is a challenge for Beijing, and putting them out or trying to kill them dissipates their ability to be effective in each one. So the more that come together, however loosely configured, the more Beijing's going to have to focus on that one or this one or that one. So starting all of these separate partnerships that overlap and can be self-reinforcing is an extremely good strategy for creating a situation that China finds very difficult to contain.
The puzzle here for me is how this is regarded in smaller states throughout the South Pacific. We often speak to you of the Pacific Islanders who are vulnerable to encouragement, sometimes cash encouragement by the PRC. These warships, are they a significant factor when it when people think about whether they're going to go with PRC money and say oppose Taiwan or stay neutral and wait to see how it sorts itself out?
China's been very effective until recently on the political warfare front about presenting the inevitable rise and hegemony of the Chinese Communist Party as inevitable, right? As something that's just going to happen. So you might as well sign on as quickly as you can and become part of this great East Asian sphere of cooperation 2.0. So the idea that there's more activity in the region and that China's success is not a foregone conclusion gives pause in some of the lobbies in these various capitals about throwing their lot in completely with China. And you don't even have to go to the little Pacific Island countries. You can start to see in New Zealand, for example, which seems to their political elite and economic elite seem to have completely bought into, you know, the inevitable rise of China and how they should just hitch themselves to that particular wagon train. Suddenly they're realizing, oh, maybe there's a problem here. But it's almost too late. They've been so co-opted at this point that it's going to be difficult to extricate themselves. But I think that the more that the kind of free world shows up in the region and shows that there actually are legitimate alternatives and real options economically, politically, and especially strategically, the harder it is for that Chinese political warfare to win the day. And the harder it's going to be for Beijing to control the region unopposed.
Gordon?
So, Cleo, have we seen peak China?
God willing. I think they still have a lot of arrows left in their quiver, and they control the elite chapter hasn't gone away, and in many cases it's generational, and it's not a fight that's over, and there should definitely be no complacency involved. But at least with this activation of these partnerships coming together, maybe it's better than a 50-50 chance now.
Delhi, I want to go back to Delhi. Is Modi associated with the Quad? Does Modi get credit for the Germans and the Dutch and the British showing up?
That's a good question. The existence of the Quad definitely woke up Europe, and especially the big countries within Europe who want to have a say in what's clearly the oceans of the 21st century. If the Atlantic was the 20th century, then the Indo-Pacific is the 21st century. And if you're going to have any sort of influence in the 21st century, you need to have some sort of role in that, which is why you see all of these individual EU countries like France and the British and the Dutch and the Germans start to put together an Indo-Pacific policy. But the countries in the region, they know Europe, and they're going to see whether what they have to offer is just kind of seasonal, you know, whether what they're offering is real, or whether it's something that can really help create some strategic autonomy for countries like India. France has a head start on the relationship with India. The UK is going to have to go a long way to prove itself. So it varies by country.
Gordon, 1 minute.
So Cleo, with China seeing all of these warships in its peripheral waters, and maybe it sees it's being blocked, will it become more aggressive in another sphere, which is the Himalayas?
Yeah, so this is the risk. And as you know, in terms of comprehensive national power, it isn't just kinetic. It can very well be also cyber or economic warfare or biological warfare or chemical warfare, including, for example, who knows, trying to pump fentanyl into India. You know, it works so well in the U.S. So I think that definitely the aggression will not stop, which is why you can't be complacent. What form it'll take, I'm not really certain yet. They'll probably use proxies, though.
Cleo, I thank you very much, but keen here about the South Pacific. The Germans and the Japanese, we're looking at enemies of the 20th century all allied against one adversary of the 21st. At the very least, that's got to be an irony that people mumble.
Yeah, I think think the region has had all of these empires pass through it. So if you look at Palau, you know, they were run by the Germans, then run by the Japanese, then run by the Americans, and now they're under combat. They've seen empires go through the region. And what they've chosen is freedom for themselves under the U.S. umbrella. And that's the hope.
Cleo Pascal for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.